Ulterior.
So this is not a funny situation, nothing to poke fun at or make light of. But I'm going to anyways, because there was a tweet that Craig Reynolds from Straight from the Path and the Downbeat podcast made in light of the Dave Grohl news, and alright, I'm just gonna read it. Dave Grohl didn't even pull out from that tour when he broke his leg. She must have been bad. Again, it's not supposed to be funny, but you guys don't know how fucking hard I laughed when I read that tweet for the first time. It's been a week. I feel like anybody in the scene could say that, and I'm here to talk about as much of it as I can and go into as much detail as I would like to for these topics and these things and, you know, whatever else we're going to get into. It's been a lot. It's been very tiring and trying, and in other areas, very fulfilling. And, you know, maybe that's kind of the story of the scene, trying and tiring, but fulfilling. And we're here to, again, talk about whatever the fuck we got to talk about. So, yeah, we're going to talk about the update to the Linkin Park and Emily Armstrong situation and a review of the single The Emptiness Machine, and then other brand new singles by Spirit Box, Rain City Drive, and a few others I want to get to, and then brand new records by Fame on Fire and Boston Manor. Thank you guys so much. Thank you for tapping in, and I hope you guys enjoy this episode. So as I have tried to do in the past when doing weekly episodes, I would make it a point to start every episode with the number one ranked song in Scenic Overlook for that week. And I would like to do that this week, but I probably shouldn't because there is still a lot to unpack and go over as it relates to Linkin Park and their announcement of Emily Armstrong from Dead Sara as their new vocalist. And I'll get into it, I was going to say briefly, but I feel like I've got a number of things to say, even following the episode that I redid last week. Go check it out if you never got around to it. Anyways, the brand new single that they released last Thursday is called The Emptiness Machine. So, I've really tried to spend some time over the weekend and the last number of days altogether, like, thinking in my head, what do I want to say on this episode about The Emptiness Machine? Because there's not really a way to talk about this song without it going hand in hand with everything else that unfolded over the last, 5 days, 6 days, or whatever it's been now. I made an episode last Friday going into greater detail about everything that had come out regarding Emily Armstrong and her background, her past, and anything of that sort. So what I want to do firstly is talk about the single The Emptiness Machine, just as a song, as a tune, just stuff like that, because I think it's important for me and my talking points of the conversation to get that out there. And then go into a little bit of like what has developed and been updated since then. So as a song, The Emptiness Machine, I think, is fucking outstanding. I love it so much, and I think that it is like the proper sound and style for Linkin Park to have come back on. It reminds me a lot of Guilty All the Same, which is off of The Hunting Party. It kind of has like that progression in his instrumentation and the vocal delivery. I think it's very dynamic in that sense, and I really, really enjoy it. And the way that Emily came in on the second verse, I felt like was just very like epic, and especially how it was pulled off during the event where the song was premiered last Thursday. it just had like that big time feel to it, and like, you know, making the way for the person who ideally was going to be, you know, the future face of Linkin Park and the person who helped uplift this whole project. I think she sounds amazing, and she doesn't sound like, you know, she's trying to be Chester, and I think that was always going to be the most important aspect sonically from whoever Linkin Park chose to move forward with as a new vocalist. You know, don't like try to be Chester, because you're not going to be. And I don't think anybody should really have had that expectation or desire. And it's why I think a lot of the comments who their main negative point is, oh, she's not Chester. No fucking shit, she's not Chester, dude. Nobody who this band could have gotten to fill this spot was ever going to be Chester. And she is not trying to replace Chester. She is just there as the new vocalist, as a new figure in the band. And it's like genuinely like really, really irritated me whenever I've seen that be the main criticism thrown at this whole development over the last week, because there's so much more like happening here, so much more serious shit, and your like main gripe is that she's not Chester. Dude, fuck you, like seriously. And then now, having said all of that about The Emptiness Machine as a song, let's pick up a little bit where I left off when making that episode last week about the history of Emily and her ties to Scientology and Danny Masterson. I had said during the video, or during the episode I recorded, that I kind of believed that if a statement was going to be made by Emily, it would focus solely on Danny Masterson and not Scientology. And that's pretty much exactly what happened late Friday night. Emily posted to her Instagram story this explanation about her connection to Danny and her attendance at one of his like early hearings and arraignment and, you know, that sort of stuff. And she said that she went there supporting a friend and over time realized that he was guilty and he did indeed, you know, do everything that he was accused of and charged with and now being sentenced for. And she is taking a stand against any victims of, you know, that kind of transgression, we'll put it that way. And then after that, you know, there were some people asking, well, what about the Scientology part of her background? Because she did not address that whatsoever in that Instagram story post, nor has she addressed it in any manner since then. And I'm going to say this, and, you know, it's not something that I expect anybody to, like, have any, like, sort of, like, leeway for or give her, like, a quote-unquote pass for, but it's just the reality of the situation. If you're waiting for an explanation from Emily about Scientology and any kind of statement on whether she is in the church now or not, you are never, ever going to get it. Because Emily is still a member of the Church of Scientology, and by law of Scientology, she cannot comment on that publicly. Because, okay, one of two things would happen. Either she says publicly that she is still a member of Scientology and this negative backlash toward, I don't know why I said negative backlash, all backlash is negative. Any backlash towards Linkin Park would, you know, be, I guess, justified and upheld because, oh, she's admitting that she is still in Scientology. And then even if she tried to say that she is not in Scientology anymore, firstly, that's a lie. And secondly, you can't do that if you're in the church. You cannot publicly leave Scientology. You cannot publicly shame the church or its practices or anything like that, because you would then have to be cut off by any friends and family who are still in the church, and it could get even more dangerous and risky for her thereafter. Like, by her saying anything about Scientology publicly, she would be, like, honestly be putting her safety at risk. And that does mean that there is going to be a part of this story and controversy that, for a lot of fans, is just never going to be resolved. And, you know, I wish there was something that anybody could say to alleviate those concerns by anybody who, you know, does not want to support Linkin Park because of these developments, but you're not going to get it. You're just not going to. And then there were just, like, so many other elements and pieces to all of this that makes it truly the most complex thing that we've ever seen in alternative music when it comes to having to make a decision about, you know, do you support this or do you not support it? Because it feels like there is an infinite amount of oh, but wait, this thing. Like, just to give some examples. Emily is a Scientologist, but she was born into it, and thus didn't really have a choice to continue on with the church, because that's just how, like, the cult works. Chester's oldest son has spoken out against Emily, but he's also not entirely sane. He is he's somebody who publicizes conspiracy theories that his father was murdered, and as opposed to, you know, taking his own life. The lyrics to The Emptiness Machine sound like they're about Emily leaving Scientology. Yes, they do sound like that, but we will never actually know that, and thus I don't think that can be used definitively to absolve Emily or the people around her who have made these decisions of anything. Chester's wife gave Emily her blessing. Yes, she did. But we don't know what the vetting process from Linkin Park was or how much of that was relayed to Linda. And I'm just kind of like rambling on, but I hope you guys understand like what I'm trying to say when I say that like this is just like so complex and there's so many different pieces to it. And we've genuinely never seen anything like this before, because usually when there's a, you know, reason, like justifiable reason to write off a band and not support them, it's pretty like cut and dry and clear. Yet this time, it's not. And that's very, very, very fucking weird. And, you know, anybody can say, like, oh, why couldn't Linkin Park have just gone with somebody else? Why couldn't they have, like, done this or done that? I don't know, but this is what happened. You know, they didn't choose somebody else. They chose Emily. And now everybody has to make decisions. And I say everybody because I don't think this is a like a one-size-fits-all type of a thing. Everybody has to make their own decision now about where they stand with Linkin Park and where they're going to stand once From Zero drops on November 15th. Which brings me to, you know, my decision, and something that I've always tried to predicate this whole podcast and everything that I do on social media for music. I will never, ever lie to you guys. Like, I want to be open and honest and truthful with everything as it pertains to what I do with this platform. Am I going to listen to From Zero and review it? As of right now, yes. And that's my decision just based off of what I know about the situation and the amount of unknown entities that some of them I can, like, you know, pin against people, and then some of them I don't think I can. There is so much gray area that exists within this whole situation, and I don't think anybody should be blamed for, you know, making a decision against another one or, you know, whatever the case might be. I am going to review From Zero. I'm going to listen to it. I'm going to talk about it. Maybe it gets mentioned for year-end stuff. We'll see. But I acknowledge right now that I could be making a mistake. As for the rest of the episode now, I want to, you know, talk about some of the stuff that's more celebratory in that aspect, such as the actual number one ranked song for the week in Scenic Overlook. It is the brand new single out right now by Spiritbox called Soft Spine. I gotta point this out right away, because this song has two of the fucking coldest and hardest lines that you're gonna hear anywhere in alternative music for 2024. The very first line in the song, "You all deserve each other," and then the breakdown call, "Your God will sort you when you die." And I think, like, that kind of aggression is very prevalent throughout the entirety of Soft Spine. And I say aggressive, but I don't mean that to necessarily, you know, relay to you guys who maybe haven't heard the song yet that it's just heavy and ferocious all the way through, because yes, sure it is, but I also think there is a lot of rhythmic sensibility to Soft Spine, and notably in the chorus, like, I'm as able to, you know, easily, like, nod my head and tap my foot to the chorus of the song, even with it being as heavy as it is, as I am, say, a chorus like, circle with me, like, just to give an example for that end. But yeah, all in all, great energy, great bounce, great rhythm, just a great song, all in all, and I have a lot of adulation for Spirit Box and what they're doing. They're currently on tour right now with Korn and Gojira, so if you have the chance to go out there and see Spirit Box in an arena setting, I highly encourage all of you guys to do so. Brand new single out by Rain City Drive, this is Concrete Closure. So I'm pretty sure that this is going to end up being the final single released by the band ahead of their new album. Things are different now, dropping on September 27th, so legitimately just 2 weeks out from now, and I would say that I'm actually quite excited for this record. I know I might not have had the, you know, the most, like, nice things to say about the self-titled record from 2022, but also when I look back at To Better Days from 2020, that's like a top 15, top 10 album for myself of the entire decade so far, and not necessarily that I feel like Things Are Different Now has that same trajectory as To Better Days, but it's definitely the kind of trajectory that is doing so much to, like, reinstill my faith in the band and my excitement level for everything that they do, because I think Concrete Closure is just, like, so fucking undeniable of a song. Like, I look at it similarly to how I do Medicate Me, which is kind of like, you know, maybe the song of the summer for a lot of people out there in the scene, at the very least. It's just, like, so catchy and infectious, like, catch such like a danceable, like, hook and rhythm and all that sort of shit to it. I think Matt McAndrew's voice is, like, so complimentary to this kind of a style for Rain City Drive, and whenever they, you know, get a little bit, like, pop inspired like they do here, it's a great time all around. And again, I really, really enjoy the song, and a lot of great hopes and expectations for the full album out in 2 weeks. So there's one more single that I want to, like, give its own spotlight to, and I am pretty sure that I've never given that kind of dedicated attention and time to this band on this show before, and I want to do so now because I have a lot of thoughts about this new single. It's by Us in Motion. It's called Freezing Moon. So this is a part of another September 27th release. It is The Noble Rot. It is a full-length album out by Us in Motion. And I think, at the very least, I have listened to all of the singles leading up to this point, and I've included them in the weekly roundup posts that I do on social media. But when it came to my experience listening to Freezing Moon, I was just thinking to myself, like, there is no way for me to deny any opportunity to talk about this song and this band extensively, because I think Freezing Moon has a lot of, like, great elements to it. I likened it a lot to, like, Cove era Seosin. Like, it just kind of had, like, that sort of a delivery and that emphatic nature in its progression as kind of like a post-hardcore song that teeters on the line of alternative rock. If any of that makes any sense to you guys, and, like, I would highly, highly implore you all to go check out this song and check out anything that has been done so far by Us in Motion, again, leading up to the album The Noble Rot, out September 27th. I will absolutely be talking about it on this show and on social media, and my hope is that it's the kind of album that I'm not going to shut up about, because the more that I look at this singles roll out that I've probably overlooked in some areas, the more I understand that this could be an album that I'm going to be talking about by the end of the year. Some of the other singles that I reviewed this week on social media that I want to at least make mention of would include Hold Me Down by Holofront. I think this song is an incredible return to form after not really, you know, feeling last year's record by the band too much. Infectious by Memphis Mayfire. So, what I want to say about Memphis Mayfire is they might never again be a band who I look at in the conversation for like song of the year or album of the year, but I don't think that really matters because I can't deny how much I just fucking enjoy every song by them currently. And yeah, it's not innovative at all, but it doesn't have to be, man. Just be fucking good. And I think that's what Memphis Mayfire have been for, you know, like maybe 3 years now. Last Night by Not a Toy. These are the fucking vibes that Not a Toy brings, man. Like, just like the ultimate, like, chill band. And this is the kind of song that I listen to. And, like, I can just, like, close my eyes and just, you know, be at ease and, like, relax too. Like, that's just everything that Not a Toy brings to me right now, and this song is no exception. And then Bleed Me by Proposal. So if you're into like melodic hardcore and anything like that, I would say that Proposal is probably going to be like in your alley per se, and Bleed Me just has like this invigorating energy for the genre, and I really, really did enjoy it. And then there are some songs that, you know, I would say maybe didn't have the best outing last week per se. I look at The Devil of Decisions by Hands Like Houses. I have tried with this iteration of Hands Like Houses because, one, I still have this desire to enjoy what they're doing, and then, two, I like the fame. So, Raven being in the band, like, it was never supposed to be something that I felt like I was going to turn away from, but I just don't really enjoy the outputs and the efforts from the band. It's just not for me, and I'm not trying to make this be like, you know, oh, it's not Hands Like Houses. Like, no, of course it's Hands Like Houses. It's just not good, and I don't really know how else to phrase it. And then just to make mention of the other songs that were reviewed, The Great Surrender by A Shadow Within, Echoes by Alt, There Is No Cure by Cemetery Sun, Paradox by Cohen Noise, Don't Say I Didn't Warn You by Cyan Kicks, Desert Rap by Fever333, Love Me First by Heart of Gold featuring Zeta Ray, Where Does the Light Get In by Hot Milk, Take 1 Minute by Love Is Noise, and Losing Faith by Nevertell, and then also Omni by The Browning featuring The Defect. So those are the songs for the week. You can find the playlist on my Spotify account. It's Ulterior 2024 now, not Season 4, because I'm trying to, in some ways, abandon a little bit of like the trademark stuff that I had been doing beforehand. I just kind of want this whole platform to be normal and not like, you know, tied to any like gimmicks or whatever. So go check out the playlist there for any of the songs I mentioned on this episode, and then these next forthcoming ones from these two albums that I want to go over. And the first of those albums is going to be The Death Card by Fame on Fire. So I definitely think that there is a stigma attached to the name Fame on Fire, because more often than not, and I'm pretty sure this might be the case for most of you guys listening to this episode right now who are familiar with the band, you probably found them off of a cover song. And, you know, whether it was like a Taylor Swift cover or a Halsey cover or a Morgan Wallen cover, whatever the case may have been, a cover is probably how you got introduced to Fame on Fire, and it wasn't necessarily through their own original material. And I think for some people, the effect that being a quote-unquote cover band might have is that it steers you away from the original material rather than like push you into that direction. You know, we saw that happen with Our Last Night, and I think it does happen nowadays with Fame on Fire. And the shameful part of that, I would say, is that Fame on Fire's original material has been like very, very consistently good. I think their 2020 debut album, Levels, even if it like wasn't an album that I would consider to be one of my like 20 or 30 or even 40 favorites of that year, it was still an album that I went to regularly, and, you know, a song like Her Eyes just, like, stayed in my rotation. And then looking at 2022's Welcome to the Chaos, I remember giving that record a perfect score on this show and telling you guys, like, yes, I know it's Fame on Fire. I know it is a a band that you're familiar with the covers of and not the original material, but go check out the original material, because Welcome to the Chaos was just so good. And every song, again, even if not like innovative or anything that was going to break boundaries in the scene, it was just fucking excellent. And sometimes, like, I can't ask for anything more than a band to be just that. And a lot of the praise that I gave Welcome to the Chaos, it's going to extend over to the Death card, because once again, I feel like Fame on Fire just absolutely fucking delivered on a full-length album. And even if the material here is not something that is going to change the sound of sea music for years to come, it's still just a really good rock album to be able to listen to and just have like these joyous feelings over. And admittedly, because of like some like personal stuff over the summer, I was trying to kind of cut back on the amount of songs I was listening to weekly and reviewing and whatnot. And so I jumped onto the singles rollout for the Death card pretty late. The first song by the band that I heard in the rollout was Suicide the Lovers. And I feel like a little bit of a hypocrite, because even though I loved Welcome to the Chaos and I loved Elements of Levels, there was still this moment where I first listened to Suicide the Lovers, and it was like, I was just like taken aback and blown away, and there was like surprise on my end. And again, I hate that that's how I felt, because I've known about the talents of Fame on Fire, but then something about Suicide the Lovers, it just like it pulled me in, you know, like I could not get that chorus out of my head, could not stop singing the song to myself. The same thing happened to the next single thereafter, which was Nothing Left the Fool. Just this amazing time that I spent with these songs, and it reminds me a lot of like what other bands like Catch Your Breath and Until I Wake are doing nowadays. And I think Fame on Fire has the kind of style and sound that blends so well into that sector of the scene. I think when you look at the opening song, No Tomorrow, the Death card, there is a real case for it being one of the best opening songs on any record all year so far. It's just so, like forward moving in a way. Like, what I mean by that is, you listen to the song, and it doesn't have, like, this extensive build-up or anything like that. It kind of just, like, throws you into what the Death card is going to be bringing you, and it lets you understand right away that this is an album that you might end up, you know, having, like, several moments throughout it where you want to like go back and re-listen to a song, as opposed to just going through the album continuously in one full stretch. And that's because these songs just have those undeniable intangibles to them. As of right now, my favorite song off the album is Chains the Tower, which features SIM or Sim. I'm not sure how you say their name exactly, but regardless, it's the band that did the Attack on Titan opening, The Rumbling, from like, I think it was 2 years ago now. So if you're familiar with that song, then this is, you know, the band that did that. And it's the kind of feature spot that I think works so well, and it does a lot to help elevate what this song already, you know, was able to do in terms of captivating me through its chorus and its rhythm and everything in that regard. I think Chains is just like this perfect song that I'm tempted to call it like the best song ever made by Fame on Fire. I'd have to like listen to this album all the way through again, and then even Welcome to the Chaos and then some of Levels to really have that scope on what I think is like definitively their best song. But it's hard for me to think about anything else when I'm listening to Chains. I don't know if, okay, so firstly, there's a song called Unalive, Ten of Swords. It actually follows Chains in the track listing. I don't know if this is anything that anybody else would have kind of picked up on or perceived when listening to that song, but it reminds me a lot of Page Avenue by Story of the Year. It just kind of has like that throwback feel to a time where, you know, some bands are doing like post-hardcore, but in a way that teetered on the line of being just like radio rock, at least for like the 2000s era of that sound. It just has that kind of a feeling to me, and it really did a lot to help like make me an even bigger fan of that song than I already was. And then when I look at the way that the record closes, which is Lie to Me, Seven of Swords, it's able to end this very energetic and upbeat sounding album on a somber note that really mirrors the the lyrical nature of the Death Card. It's quite different from the rest of the album, but its placement as the closer, it really does help make me believe that I had just listened to, you know, this epic album that was able to take me on this journey and make me feel a variety of emotions. And by the end of the Death Card, I'm just sitting there and thinking like, man, there are still going to be people out there who write off this band because of how they perceive them with their covers. And if that happens to be, you know, any of you guys who are listening to this episode right now, I don't mean that in any manner of like throwing shade at you or whatever. I just wish that, you know, people could have their like their eyes open and their ears open in a way, and just allow Fame on Fire's original material at least a fucking chance to win them over, because I think there are so many moments on the Death Card where somebody can be bought by Fame on Fire and they can have their opinion swayed. Because like I've been saying this entire review, I think this material is just so undeniable. It's not the most innovative, it's not going to, you know, win Album of the Year, none of these songs are going to be Song of the Year, but who really gives a fuck about any of those accolades when you have an album that is just as much of a fucking heater as the Death Card? And now for the second and final album of the episode. It is one that I, myself, and so many others had a lot of very, very high expectations for, given the band that put this out and the, I want to say, like, the quiet legacy that they've been building. The album is Sundiver, and the band is Boston Manor. I think the direction that I want to take this review in is by making note of when this show started, and that was in January of 2021, meaning that I didn't get to talk about, you know, Record of the Year or Song of the Year for 2020 or 2018, but just know that if this show had existed as far back as 2018, then we're talking about Boston Manor being one of the most accomplished and celebrated bands of this podcast, again, if it did exist in those time eras. Because when I think of Boston Manor, I think of Welcome to the Neighborhood, and I think of Glue. And I think of the profound impact that those two records had on me. And for different reasons, because Welcome to the Neighborhood came out in, like, towards the fall of 2018. And, you know, this is at a time where I'm still listening to Monstro by Bring Me the Horizon every single day. I've already had in my head, like, okay, Record of the Year is going to be Technologies by Don Broco, or Hard Feelings by Blessed Fall, or maybe The Silver Screen by Ice Nine Kills, because we still have that coming ahead. And then Welcome to the Neighborhood just kind of like fucking made itself the conversation in my head for the rest of that year. And there was no way for me to look at Welcome to the Neighborhood as anything less than not just the record of the year for 2018, but also one of the best albums I've ever listened to in my life. And 6 years later, I am still of that mindset. The rollout to Glue began in January, or not really in January, but I feel like properly in January of 2020. And I was like kind of going through a lot of things personally, and having a song like Everything Was Ordinary be there by my side to kind of like wield whenever I wanted to, that did a lot for me mentally. And then by the time we got Glue, you know, we're in the midst of the pandemic and not really knowing what was going to happen or when things were going to go back to normal. And Glue just kind of meant a lot more to me in that setting, and just kind of helping me navigate these, like, these thoughts and these feelings of despair and depravity in my head. And it was just, like, so, like, again, meaningful. I don't really have another way to explain it. Glue was able to kind of help me so much in 2020, and I'll never really be able to thank Boston Manor for that two record stretch that, you know, over those 2 years just became a part of my life, and a fucking big part of that. And that's not at all me saying that the albums and the EPs that Boston Manor have released since the show began are in any way bad, because I look at Desperate Times, Desperate Measures and Datura, and those two releases still had their places in the history of Ulterior and everything that I'm doing, but there's no way for me to, like, convincingly tell you guys that those two releases made me feel the same way that Welcome to the Neighborhood and Glue did. And as I look now into Sundiver, which is serving as the continuation of Datura, Datura Part 2, if you will, in the story, am I able to say that this album is on the level of Welcome to the Neighborhood and Glue? Maybe. And I wish I had my mind made up by the time I, you know, press record on this episode right now, but if I'm just, like, keeping in stack with you guys and being truthful and honest, I feel like Sundiver is the kind of album that I'm still going to need a little bit more time to spend with and decide if it's in that echelon. It's not impactful in the way of Welcome to the Neighborhood and Glue, because I knew right away, like, from the fucking second I finished those albums where they stood in my mind, but Sundiver, it's a little bit more methodical and intricate in terms of being layered and impactful, more so than those two records specifically. I remember when Container dropped as the lead single for Sundiver back in February of this year, I was, like, right there with it, man. Just kind of obsessed with that song and how catchy it was, and, like, the weird quirky music video with, like, what do you call it when there's, like, a camera shot that is able to follow somebody's head back and forth? I hope you guys know what I mean, and that's really what the Container video was articulating to viewers, and it just did a lot to, like, really set the stage and the foundation for Sundiver and kind of give it its own identity, as opposed to just being, you know, the second part of Datura, because that's easily what could have happened, but Boston Manor did not let that happen. The next two singles after that were Sliding Door and Heat Me Up. I feel like maybe more so than Container, those two songs spelled out more about what Sundiver was going to be chasing sonically and stylistically. I feel like this album at large is kind of like a love letter to 90s alternative rock and grunge, because I can hear, like, a lot of influences by, like, maybe Soundgarden or Alice in Chains in this record, just from, like, the guitar tones to, you know, the way that Henry is singing some of these lines. And then Horses in a Dream dropped next, and to say that, like, I haven't been able to get this song out of my head since then is, like, a wild understatement. Horses in a Dream is one of the most unique songs that Boston Manor has ever done, and I feel like that covers a lot of ground given what this band has been able to do with their sound over the years. It feels like, I'm trying to figure out the best way to describe Horses in a Dream, but I feel like it's also one of those kinds of songs that it can't really be summed up into words, and you really just have to go out and hear it for yourself. I'll put it this way, it's like, I can close my eyes listening to Horses in a Dream and imagine somebody just, like, walking down, like, a dark street and kind of having to, like, look over their shoulders every few seconds or so. It's, like, it's catchy and bouncy and danceable while still being very chilling and eerie. It's kind of oxymoronic when it comes to the different, like, tones that it brings forth, but it's able to do all that, and in a way that's, like, not gimmicky whatsoever. Boston Manor took an idea as, like, odd and daring as Horses in a Dream, and they made it quite possibly the best song on Sundiver. There's a song in the middle of the album called Morning Star that I don't know if it was, like, really meant to be an interlude, but it feels like that, exactly. You know, it feels like a break between two acts of this record. It's very drum and bass in its style and delivery, and I think it somehow still managed to work out really well as that kind of, you know, again, like a middle section or break between the two parts of the album. And that song following up Horses in a Dream, it's like I'm listening to this album all the way through, and at that point in it, it feels like Boston Manor is, like, putting me in like this trance-like state in so many ways. And then they kind of snap me out of it with Why I Sleep. And between that song and Fornix, which is the track that follows up Why I Sleep, I think that stretch of the album kind of reverts back to what I was mentioning about being a love letter to 90s grunge. Fornix in particular is, in my opinion, the very best song on this album that ventured into that kind of a style and sound. It's just like so crisp and clean and everything that it does. It feels like, to me at least, the culmination of that core Sundiver sound. And when I close up this record for the very first time, Fornix was like the song that I wanted to go back and listen to the most. And then a song like Dissolve, I know I mentioned Technologies by Don Broco earlier in this review for Sundiver, and there are like some elements to Dissolve that really do remind me of that particular style of Boston, or of Don Broco. It's just like very like upbeat, and you kind of like move your arms and your shoulders and your hips around to it, and it's not meant to be like a danceable song, I would think, but it just gives off that vibe and that aura, and it's just like such a great time all together. And then you go into What Is Taken Will Never Be Lost, very like indie folk in some ways, and I know I'm like saying all of these like buzzwords and terms to describe different parts of this album, and maybe it sounds like none of this actually goes together, and on paper, yeah, maybe it wouldn't, but in the execution of Sundiver, every odd element to this album is able to come together in such a really magical and astonishing way. And again, even if this is a band that I have known for fucking years now, has that kind of a caliber to them, I'm still listening to these different sections of Sundiver and just thinking to myself, like, fuck, man, I really genuinely get to live in the same time period as Boston Manor and embrace and celebrate all of these very unique ideas that they're bringing to a scene that admittedly, you know, sometimes can be mundane. And then you get to the closing track, which is DC Mini, and it features Debbie Go from Harriet. And if any of you guys are unfamiliar with Harriet, they are a metalcore band. And metalcore is not exactly a type of genre that Boston Manor have ever, bordered that bridge on in any way. Yet they were able to bring Debbie into this song, and maybe it's because of like, you know, the very raw tone to the guitars in this track, but Debbie's voice is able to just like fit so perfectly into DC Mini and be a complementary piece to the overall story and the narrative of Sundiver, from every aspect of like the lyricism to the style of the song and the album altogether. And then, like I said earlier, when I listen to Sundiver, I don't know definitively yet if it's an album that I want to put on the echelon of Glue and Welcome to the Neighborhood, but it might also be an unfair comparison because those two albums, you know, part of why they stand out to me is the time period that I got to listen to them in. If you put Sundiver in the same pandemic setting as Glue, I think there is a probable chance of this album having the same effect on me. So getting to hear it now in 2024, I feel like there's like so much more for me to explore with this album. And maybe there's other people out there who have a similar feeling. Like, this isn't the kind of album that you can listen to once or twice or three times, or maybe even like fucking 10 times, dude, and feel like you have like a full scope of and a full grasp on. Sundiver is layered. It's complicated in some ways. You really need to like dig through it. And I don't know if that's going to take another few days, another few weeks, maybe months. Like, who the fuck knows, man? But as Sundiver stands right now, even with all of that like mystery and mystique that I'm attaching to it, I think it is still definitively one of the very best albums all year so far. And for me to like say that I don't even know where it stands in Boston Manor's discography right now, I want to use that to really emphasize what I think about Boston Manor, because there are so many other bands who, if they release an album of this caliber, it would like easily, no fucking question, be the best of their career. But for me to say that I don't even know where it stands for Boston Manor right now, that's me trying to emphasize to you guys the legacy that Boston Manor have been building and the genuine, real fucking case they have to being one of the very best bands of this generation of alternative music. And that's it. That was every album and single from last week that I really wanted to dive into and make the time to talk about extensively. And, you know, I know that I had not had a, like, normal episode like this for probably months now. It's just been, like, a lot of stuff going on, and I don't want to give any kind of a speech about, like, oh, you know, this is where I've been, this is what has happened, this is what might happen in the future, because it's all very fucking irrelevant to what I do here on this show, you know. I want to be attentive to the scene. I want to do this show weekly again, and I can't guarantee that I will, but I can guarantee that I will do my very fucking best. Thank you guys so much for listening. I don't have an outro anymore, so enjoy music. The fuck was that?